inherently problematic for you. You don't want to waste your investment. But all right, I put a note in there about that. Pardon me. All righty, anything else for the net tonight?
N2VHZ.
Mr. Ken, N2VHZ, KTBAR.
Double, Gordon, K2VIR.
All right, let's get Ken in first, and then you, Howie. Go ahead, Ken.
Okay, thank you. Zen2VHZ here in Alliance, Nebraska. Hey, Gordon, I'm going to go across the net right to you, Gordon, and ask. I sent you a thing about this broadband hamnet dissertation that this young man was creating. I accidentally stumbled across on Facebook and became somewhat acquainted with him. His name is Patrick Prescott, Kilo Charlie 1 Alpha Juliet Tango. And I was curious if anything, I had slid him your email address and so forth, and he seemed to travel quite a bit back and forth to Iceland and so forth, and he's gone for a little while. I was curious if anything had came out of that whole connection more than what I had just mentioned. Back to you, Gordon.
Not that I recall, but one of the things that might be worthwhile pursuing is the you might want to check on the him and say refer him to the Arden.org website for further updates. That's Alpha Romeo Echo Delta November.org, Amateur Radio Emergency Data Network. That seems to be the nexus of the evolution of our work, following broadband hamnet and other mesh strategies. For now, anyway, we are compatible with the version 3 software from broadband hamnet. You do have to change your SSID, but that's not a big deal. And the stuff will work, but there's some really nifty features if you have a Ubiquiti node or some of the other new hardware that's coming along. Anybody want to comment about this? Maybe Randy?
Sure. Thanks, Gordon. Yeah, Arden is really the place to go to watch the and participate in the development of the mesh networks on amateur radio frequencies. The Arden supports four bands currently, 900 meg, 2.4 gig, you know, sort of the normal traditional Wi-Fi band, 5.8 gig. And while it's not in general release yet, we'll be beta testing in the next week or so on 3.4 gig, which is a completely clear band for amateur radio here in the U.S. There's no interference with commercial interests or public safety or anything else. So a lot of interesting developments there. As Gordon said, Arden is the place to watch and all the developments on ham radio mesh networking, particularly in support of emergency communications. Whiskey Uniform 2 Sierra, back to net control.
Roger, roger. Okay. Anybody else? Okay, Ken, back to you.
Once again.
Okay, very good. So any more, Ken? Are you good?
Yeah, okay, I'll take that advice. I'll slide that over to that young man. I found it interesting that out of nowhere this guy was spouting this stuff, and then I've seen that he's gone really deep into it. And being, you know, in recluse over here, we don't have, everything seems to be surprising me once in a while when I open my eyes up a little bit over the horizon. I wanted to mention that, you know, the railroad's been using the unlicensed portion of those bands in the one gigahertz and the 2 gigahertz bands. They've been using the unlicensed portion for some linking, and then when we were granted specific channel licenses, we have obtained new equipment, installed it, and we simply kicked the old equipment to the curb and put it in electronic scrap. Tell me that's not something. What do you think about that, Gordon? Back to you.
Put it on a train to New Jersey or to California. The Arden teams in those places, or Texas for that matter, the Arden teams in those places will be happy to help dispose of it.
I hear you, and I know what you're saying. Wink, wink. And, okay, just wanted to add that into this. And we're not the only ones doing that. There's going to be a lot of people doing that, you know? And, again, with this PTC thing, like, we've all seen this tragic accident down there in Philadelphia with the lack of the PTC installation along those tracks. I put the PTC in part of it in the BNSF network, and it's funny how they value freight above the human life from some statements I've seen made by Amtrak people that, you know, my company, BNSF, seems to really value everything, you know, and as far as, you know, life and limb. But Amtrak made quite the crass statement about that they would rather pay the death benefit than to have to incur the cost of installing the PTC for as little accidents as they have does not justify the cost of that installation. They would just rather pay the death benefit, which I found to be kind of shocking that that guy would say that. So if you ever have to ride on BNSF, you could just be rest assured we have it on most of our networks, so we value the human life over here. Back to net.
Yeah, and do you carry do you require that Amtrak's rolling stock use it when on your roadways?
Yeah, our engines pull their stuff, so it's installed in our engines, and it's. The cars have no, the passenger cars or the freight cars have nothing to do with it. It's the engines, and our engines actually, from what I've seen, we don't have passenger service in my neck of the woods, but down in Texas, I've seen, and in Denver, I've seen the BNSF locomotives, the actual ones that I've been in, that I've worked on, pulling passenger cars. So, yes, they do out here. They get rid of those funky-looking Amtrak things, and they hook up to these big orange and black BNSF monsters, and those things got everything going for them. Back to you.
It's amazing what happens when you have a commercial railroad that actually is a for-profit enterprise and still manages to be safer and incur the cost just fine, thank you, than the public, you know, railroad. Fascinating. Alrighty. End of my little political jag there. Alright. Anybody else on this topic?
B2J, you good?
Mr. Don.
Yeah, a friend of mine that worked for... He's saying that the passenger service is the big thing with some of these railroads, and the on-time performance is... they will do is they can rack up normally 80 miles an hour over a certain stretch back, but then they can leave the station late to get to the next station on time. They'll rack up the speed on it away someplace. Happens if they get to a 50 mile an hour curve, they better have the great train slow down long before they get up, and that's in. But they don't want to control it, keep their time schedules. I understand Europe, they do it a little different. Black time's available. Let's get help a little bit. They can get us an extra ahead of time, and there's no.
Okay, very good. Any other comments for Don?
KM4GHN, a quick commerce comment.
Go right ahead, Mitch.
Commerce is the key, I think. We're a capitalist country. It boils down to the accountants and the ROI. That's it. Freight is very valuable. That's my final comment. Over.
Touche, Mr. Mitch. Anybody else? Alrighty, sorry about that. We got a little bit of back channel information from N2MH, who's going to take his leave at this time. having your own little phone network. It's so unusual because other than my cell phone, we don't hear phones ringing in the house because the only time the household phone rings, it rings four times and the fax machine picks it up. So it's kind of neat having a phone in the house again that has a nice, quiet type of ring. I have a Grandstream GXP 1450, which is a nice little phone. In that or, you know, the Cisco's are really nice as well. And there are others, but some are easier to power than others, too. All righty. Anybody else?
What's a fax machine?
It's what's required. It's what's required when you have intellectual property documents to send. Hold on. Randy's calling.
And to VHC with one quick comment about propagation out here in the West.
What was your comment, sir? W2SW2TTT, K2BAR. You actually just dropped your call. Your connection actually dropped.
No, I hung up the phone because the audio was terrible.
Yeah, it wasn't just me. All right. Mark just called. It was fine, so I don't know what was going on.
It must be the internet.
Well, we got to get on the air and do it over the radio. It'll probably be better than the tunnel gateways. Who knows? All right. Well, who was the other station? I'm sorry.
N2PHZ.
Okay, I'm sorry. Ken, go right ahead.
Okay, let's roll the clock backwards and go into a little bit of propagation reporting. I am here in Grid Square, Delta November 82, running 100 watts out of a loop antenna on 6 meters. I can give you the report on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of May. I've experienced some propagation. My typical skip zone was my contacts were out to 1,000 miles. Delta Mike 54, Delta Mike 33, Delta Mike 13. All north and south propagation was experienced here in those 3 days on 6 meters, 50.125 in the upper sideband mode. And all the reports were good, 5x7s, 5x9s. And as usual, it was like the switch came on and the switch came off. The switch went off. It was all on or about 0200 hours to 0400 hours UTC here. So that's a 6 meter report from Western Nebraska back to net.
Interesting. So 02 to 04, and it was 1,000 mile propagation, mostly north south, and that's pretty interesting. And keep in mind that would be for us, for you local time, you are 2 hours behind us, so you are five? I'm trying to remember now. It's actually 7 hours normally for 6 hours. So I guess it's UTC minus six in your time zone. Not bad. So you're still seeing it in the evening, which is kind of nice. I guess you're working days these days, huh? Or how are you getting time to operate in those hours?
Yeah, okay. It's between 8 and 10 p.m. local time, and it is when the sun is going down now. It's about 8 p.m. And let's put it this way. I get a chance to come home for coffee. I only live 3 minutes from work, so I got to take a break or else my head will explode. You know what I'm saying? So it's a nice way of exercising my mind and starting my break time. Back to you, Gordon.
That's interesting. So it's during the twilight hours, and so it's what they call gray line propagation. And
and it's very common, you know, here it's often confused with coastal propagation, you know, because we have tropo due to the coastal inversions that invariably form over the cooler water and the warmer air of the summer months. So we get that, plus we get you know, traditional gray line, but where you are, it's pure gray line, and that's kind of neat. That's very neat, actually. And a very common propagation mode on 6 and on 10. Occasionally, you'll even see it on 2. And of course, at greater distances, you'll see it down through the HF spectrum, down to about 30 meters, no problem. Yeah, it's very common on 20 meters, for instance, to have gray line propagation. Anybody else have a comment?
2JEK, is he speaking about ESCAP, sporadic A, over?
I guess so. I mean, it's a variant of that, based on where you have, you know, the setting sun, the gray line propagation.
I don't think they really know what causes the sporadic A. They have other theories about it. I don't think anybody has been nailed it down, at least not to my knowledge.
Brady. Let's see. Anybody else?
Yeah, that's interesting. I believe we're on a, you know, we're on the right track. And the strange thing about it was, this is N2VHC, by the way. It's nice that we're talking about this. It's like the good old days. It's funny because I actually was able to switch between vertical and horizontal, and I was actually receiving the signals, believe it or not, in the vertical polarization with just a simple hamstick, commercially known hamstick antenna. I was able to receive it actually better on the hamstick, vertically polarized, at the same level as the horizontal antenna that I have. And it was quite interesting. And I checked the Hepburn map here for tropo in those days or anything like that. And I didn't see anything, any kind of abnormalities or anything indicating that there would be any kind of tropo ducting on the William Hepburn's website. So it's gray line, I believe. Gordon, back to net.
All right. The Hepburn report. Oh, that's a great thing. Hotel Echo, Papa, Bravo, Uniform, Romeo, November, dot, is it com or dot org? I can't remember now. Or dot net, I can't remember now.
Okay, I get to it through the dxinfocenter.com, tropo.html, but I guess it would be .com, and let me pull this up right here and see what it shows. It should be .com. It's, I go through dxinfocenter.com, tropo.html, that's the way I get to it. But I use it at work a lot, that Hepburn. When we get interference on the 160 band, it helps out quite a bit. Back to you.
Yeah, I've added that to tonight's information on the contact group. So definitely a good resource. Good, you know, sounds like a really neat thing to have that kind of propagation every evening around that time. That's neat. Of course, it's a little earlier here. We're on the more toward the eastern end of our time zone than you are yours. You're on the western end of your own time zone, so that makes a huge difference. By the way, for those who care, Anaheim Ducks and Chicago Blackhawks were tied in their series. It's 2-1 Anaheim with about 10 minutes left in the third. So we're just rocking and rolling here. So anyway, anybody else have any questions about propagation or comments? Good, Don.
I just tuned up on 6 meters and didn't hear a thing, so I guess we don't have anything going right now, at least not for my installation anyway.
All right. Very good. That's pretty nifty. Anybody else? Anyway, let's see what else we got here. I think we've covered all the topics. Anybody else have anything else more for the net? Because I'm kind of running out of gas here. Alrighty, well, I want to thank everybody for a really nice net. Again, if you're interested in getting the email and from the group, we can get you on ComTech Group. If you can't figure out how to get on ComTech Group on Yahoo Groups, give me an email at W2TangoTangoTango@att.net and W2TTT@att.com. Do both, and we'll be just fine. And we'll find you one way or the other. I want to thank the Chestnut Ridge Radio Club for the use of their repeater and your participation this evening. It's been fun. And, again, have a wonderful Memorial Day weekend. Remember, it is not the National Barbecue Weekend. It is a day of remembrance for those who've given their lives so that we may be free. And look forward to, hugging your family and friends, whoever that may be, on this weekend, because we're basically able to have the freedom that they sacrificed for. God bless and have a good evening. This is KTBAR W2TTT, returning to repeater, normal amateur radio use.
W2TTT from K2EIR.
Yeah, K2EIR, W2TTT. If you can believe it, I'm on a phone for work.
Believe it. Bye-bye.
All right. Sorry, Howie. We'll catch you later tomorrow. My guess is mañana, baby. K2EIR, W2TTT, 73.
73, no problem. Ken, WB2VHZ. WB2VHZ, this is K2EIR. Are you around?
Howie, this is November to Victor Hotel Zulu and to VHZ. Yes, I transitioned from the house to the vehicle. What's going on, man? I'm mobile right now. How have you been?
Yeah, I had to miss the end of the net. I ate the wrong thing for supper, or too much of the wrong things, and I knew what I was doing, and I shouldn't have. I have a question. What frequencies, you were talking about 6 meters, what frequency approximately do you have these upper sideband contacts on?
Oh, okay. Always on the calling channel, which is frequency 50.125. That's 50.125. That's the calling frequency for North America, and I think ITU region too. It's funny because you'll hear people on 50.110 and 50.200. Those are more international calling frequencies, and you make a contact and you move up, a couple of hertz, a couple of kilohertz, but most contacts just take place there, and that's the way it is. But the funny thing is I've made quite a few. I scan between 50.110 and 50.215. I just search, scan, whatever you want to call it. Goes through the whole gamut and loops around. So, yeah, the 50.125 is the frequency. Back to you, Howie.
Roger. Okay, hold on. Let me get my HF rig. I just turned it on, and I just want to see what I'm set for there. Yeah, right now I have 50.126 in here, but the problem I have is I have a very high noise level right now. It's S6, so I'm just going to turn off the rig. Much better. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious if I was prepared to work anything or listen, you know, hear anything. Because I've had, I think, the FM calling frequency and the sideband calling frequency programmed into this thing, and I just, as they say, I have a high noise level, so I never hear anything. But I was hoping someday to luck out, you know, at least, you know, if there was really big openings, get strong signals that would come over the noise. Back to you.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I was doing some research on this, and, you know, I think you're in grid Fox November 20 or 21 or, you know, Fox Mike 20, Fox Mike 21, all of those grids over there, New York, New Jersey, you know, Southern New Jersey's in another grid, you know, like FN 20. And, you know, all four grids have at least as high as they can count, 5,000, which is the number they can count to, hams each grid. You have over 5,000 hams each grid, right? Now, with all of that said and done, 5,000 hams per grid, and all four grids are connecting, you got like 20,000 hams in like a really small area, right? In my grid, out here in the middle of nowhere, we've got 50 hams, and the grid connecting us has got 30. So, you see the difference? Like, when I live out here, I have no noise, I have nobody to talk to, nobody to hear. The only people I hear are DX stations. That's, you know, because when I was over there in FN20 and so forth, I always have people to talk to. Like, Gordon would be on the air and other people. It was getting crazy, but it was fun. Out here, you could call till you're blue in the face, you don't hear nothing. But then when they do hear you, it actually causes a pileup. Because I just received a couple of QSL cards in the mail the other day, old-fashioned style, you know, and I love sending them back to people because I know how much it made me feel good when I was going for my VUCC award to get QSL cards and send them out. So I like to reciprocate, you know, and the QSL card, the paper one, is the actual manifestation of a, you know, of a contact. That's the end. That's the bow on the package, you know. So I got two of them yesterday from the contacts I spoke about just earlier tonight. Back to you.
Roger. Roger. This is K2EIR. Yeah, I haven't really had any commercially printed cards now for, I think, two QTHs. It's been a really long time. And, of course, these days you can print them off on a computer, and I've done those one-offs, and, but it's such a job. First of all, I don't have a color printer hooked up most of the time, so for a QSL, I like to get the color printer out, and I rarely use my color printer, so it isn't like it's there on the shelf or whatever. I have to get it out of the box and find a place to rest it and plug it in and so forth. So I just don't bother. Of course, but I have a million things on my do list. What I really ought to do, of course, is print up like 10 cards in advance. You know, and it probably left me a year, but I haven't done that. And I agree, it's nice to get cards and be able to show them. I really wish sometimes I had a whole room, a real shack, you know, something where you could put a bulletin board on the wall and put up QSL cards and some other things that would be handy just to look up at, you know, references and whatever. And then it's always nice to bring people into your shack. But in fact, these days, compared to my youth, it isn't the same thing. You know, some of the things we did when I was young, let this reset. When I was first a ham and, you know, a teenager or a little bit older, some of us hams would just visit each other's shacks, and that way we could see and actually sit at somebody else's equipment and see what it was like. So you got an idea. I remember, for example, comparing the HQ-170 the Hanoland receiver, which everyone thought was hot potatoes, with my Drake 2B. And I found my Drake 2B far better. The HQ-170 would overload and that kind of thing. Had microphonics. Not too bad, but, you know, it had them. Those kinds of things. There's nothing like sitting at somebody else's station and trying equipment. Now, I never do that, you know. I don't know whether it's my life is too busy or just the way the ham radio world has changed and everything. Certainly, as I've mentioned to somebody else about mentoring, a guy no longer invites the neighborhood kid into his basement to see his equipment, you know. N2VHZ from K2EIR.
K2EIR, N2VHZ. Yeah, QSL on everything you said. When I first moved back to the States, to North Carolina, we had this rental house, and our nearest neighbor, you know, was a couple of hundred yards away. It was a remote area, so they wanted to see what all the ruckus was about pulled up. So the kids came over, and they're looking at everything, and out comes the turntable, out comes my records, you know, my albums, and they're like, I said, hey, did you ever see any of this? You know how this, what this is? Because I knew they didn't. No, what is that? I said, it's a turntable. These are albums. How does that work? You know, they didn't have no idea. So I said, come back in a couple of days. I'll come get you, you know, and I'll show you how it works. I brought them over the house, showed them how, you know, how you put a stylus on, a needle on a record, how it makes music. They've never seen anything like that in their life. To them, that was amazing. How a record played, they just take it for granted, you know, with CDs and so forth, P3. But, yeah, and in the radio portion, you can forget it, you know. It's over most adults' heads. They can't wrap their head around it. But children seem very absorbent to that. And I was speaking to quite a few kids the other day, actually at school over there in Southern California, I think on 20 meters, and sent them a QSL card, and they were all excited. Bunch of 10-year-olds talking to me on 20 meters with the science teacher watching over them, you know, and they were having a great time down there in this elementary school. So I gladly sent them, and I did exactly as you said, Howie. I printed out like 10, and I'm down to about 3 now, so I have to print out more at work, QSL cards. And, yeah, what I wanted to say overall was that if you get on 50.125, no matter what the noise level is, throw out your call. You're in a good area. Somebody will probably come back to you, you know, because there's a lot of dudes there. You've got thousands of hams just listening to that frequency right now. And if you call, they'll come back to you eventually. That's how it happened for me when I was over there. Back to you. Out in the moving trucks.
Okay, yeah, you said something about moving trucks right at the end, and I had the volume down a little bit because it's late here, and my daughter's very sensitive, and unfortunately I'm getting hard of hearing. A lot of things are going wrong with me as I get older. Talk about that another time. what was I going to say? I see there's the fatigue as well as getting older. There were things you said that I resonated with me. Oh, about the turntable and stylus. Yeah, I can picture it and I understand. That technology thing is hard to, you know, even when we had the changes with that, like the super lightweight styluses and all that, it still resembled the really old phonographs, even the ones with the big horn instead of a real amplifier, you know, the RCAs or whatever, you know, the master and his dog, you know, that kind of thing. But I have a similar experience. My daughter was about 4 years old, and I had, I started with a personal computer. I couldn't afford an IBM, and I got a Sanyo, and I started with that. But I think even by the time I had an IBM personal computer, I got a daisy wheel printer. A letter quality printer, true letter quality printer, okay, and which was relatively rare at that time. So I used to use it for letters. And one day I had to do an envelope and I took down my portable typewriter that I used to write my college term papers. I put it on a TV tray, and my daughter saw that and asked me what it was and what I was doing, and I tried to explain to my four-year-old about it, and when I did and showed her, she said, "Oh, I understand, Daddy. It's like a printer."
Yeah, isn't it somehow everything goes backwards again? It's like over here as I'm approaching the register room, as they call it, this is where they dispatch the locomotive engineers and conductors. They have a printer in there, and what it is, it's a tractor-fed dot matrix, like the old days, you know? And I says, "Do you think that's really appropriate? I mean," and there it is. They print out a big, giant length of paper, probably 20 feet long, and it's fan-folded. And to them, this is perfectly normal. And the guy said to me, I said, "Do you think this is appropriate for this day and age?" And the conductor looks at me and goes, "Why should we change if it's not broken? How long have you been using this printer for?" "Oh, probably 20 years. I couldn't believe it, you know? So could you imagine what it's like at their house for some of these people? You know, there's people out here who don't even have a television. You know that? They won't have a television in their house. They say it's poison for the mind." Back to you.
Well, sometimes I wish, sometimes I agree. I didn't want to get a TV. My mother sabotaged me. She thought it was the greatest thing to give us, my wife and I, an engagement present of a TV. But I purposely didn't have a TV for about 10 years, and I was far more productive. Of course, now I'm kind of addicted to it. You know, we all have our favorite series, and these days, where I would get something done if I would do, you know, even enjoy ham radio, most evenings now I just am so fatigued, all I want to do is sit in the recliner and watch the television. And that's more because I think I want to be in the recliner than that I want to watch TV. It's just the right place for me to be. I just don't seem to have the energy to get at the rig. Also, usually I have to do some setup here with the antennas. Maybe I made a mistake in not buying a house. At least I could have my own antenna. I'll tell you, these deed restrictions and everything else are poison for ham radio. But yeah, I understand. By the way, I may have only recently thrown away, or maybe I still have, a wide carriage dot matrix printer. And in terms of why get rid of it if it's still working, you know, it's not broken. I used to re-ink my ribbons. I bought what was called a Mac re-inker from an outfit that's still around. They now have stores locally. Micro Center used to be called MEI, and they used to be out in Ohio, and I bought one of these ring inkers, bottles of ink, and I'd put the ink in it, and you run the ribbon on it, and it would ink the ribbon, re-ink it, and you didn't have to buy a new ribbon until the ribbon got completely mechanically worn. So I think I only owned about three or four ribbons, including one in red. I used that printer for at least a decade. N2VHZ from K2EIR.
K2EIR, this is N2VHZ. Yeah, very good. Back to the six-meter thing, you know what was funny? When I lived over in Bergen County, there would be people out in PA that would talk to me on 6 meters, and then there were people over on the other side of Bergen County in New York City that would talk to me. So the funny thing is, once in a while I would get involved in a net, and it was so frustrating being in the middle geographically in the middle of the footprint of a net when you're using, like, I had a three-element Yagi, and the rotor just would not catch up to what was going on. So that's when I made a conscious decision to go and experiment with this antenna called the PAR OmniAngle. We spoke about that earlier before, and I think I turned you on to that company, PAR, Papa Alfa Romeo. And he was based in Florida back in the day. He's moved up to North Carolina to the Piedmont Mountains. And his name is Dale Parfit, the creator of these antennas, makes them in his garage himself. And the funniest thing is, I bought this antenna, it worked excellent. It got such good reviews later on after I owned it, because my propagation was not affected, my output was never affected at all. I'd seen no difference between that antenna and a three-element yag you with a rotor. So this antenna, over time, as the internet matured and they started to have e-ham and things like this where people would rate certain things, the PAR antennas get 5.0 out of 5.0 points because of the superior performance. You are in a perfect location to have a PAR omni-angle antenna and be able to use that because it radiates in all directions equally as well, receives in all directions, horizontally polarized, and you can get great DX with it. And, you know, in your area, you can have a lot of chit-chat on the 6-meter band. Even when it sounds like it's dead, it may be alive. Back to you.
Here is K2EIR. Yeah, well, by the way, you did send me photos of that, and I did look up the webpage. It turns out that an omnidirectional antenna here, I mean, I'm using them. I'm used to talking to you now on one 5/8 wave vertical that's mag-mounted on my 20 or 30 or 40-year-old desk, fluorescent desk lamp. Let me tell you, this is an oldie. I inherited it, so to speak. It was given to me by my sister-in-law. So it's seen a long... I think she used it when she was in high school, and, you know, she's retirement age now. So it goes back. Anyway, really, omnidirectional antennas here are a waste because I've got such hills in some of the directions that I really only have one good direction, and that's west. Well, two good directions, probably west and south, but that's mostly south, and to a limited extent north. I can see the Hudson from here, and I'm on a hill, and it falls off going downhill toward the Hudson. We have so many trees that I can't see the Hudson that well, but I can see from the map that I'm, you know, maybe half a mile from it. And in the other directions, again, there's such hills. And even west, what I hit west is the Palisades, because the west shore of the Hudson is much higher than the newer where I am. So it probably, although with our VHF, the signals bounce. I'm pretty sure the signals bounce down to the, you know, to the New York City Bay and Staten Island and all that. So I can hear Staten Island very nice in the south. And this repeater, I mean, this is basically, the repeater is basically southwest of me. And probably at my elevation is a line of sight type of thing, and repeater's elevation. There, I don't have, you know, again, it's a lot of mountains and hills, at least in, say, at least 180 degrees of the location. So an omnidirectional antenna really isn't, it's sort of wasted. Back to you.
Okay, how far away are these mountains? Put it this way. I had this antenna in my attic in Karlstad, right? And I didn't care what was going on, you know what I'm saying? And it got out like crazy because, you know, even though the antenna is horizontal, that's really for the polarization. It helps out as far as you don't have cross polarization and you have a lower noise figure on your reception because most man-made noise is vertical in polarization. And horizontal is the preferred mode for people like, for example, like back in the old days, I'll use Gordon again for the example. He would be on 6 meters, and if I was vertical, I could hardly hear him. But if I was horizontal, he was, you know, booming in. So you might be also muting in that direction because your vertical, the direction that you prefer, let's say southwest. But even still, if the mountains are like miles away, that should have no effect on the skip angle as receiving and transmitting skip. You can also do this on 2 meters, you know. They make these for 2 meters, very small ones. But they're for 2 meters, they work very good also. What I was going to say is, you know, it's funny. Over in Europe, you can't use FM on 6 meters. There's no 6-meter FM operation. There's nothing above 52 megahertz allowed. And there's no vertical polarization allowed in Europe. You can't even use a vertical antenna on 6 meters. Technically, it's illegal. Can you believe it? So, just to let you know, and you might be pleasantly surprised. And I keep pushing you in that direction. You know, back to you.
Well, again, Ken, I'm noise. There's a lot of, in fact, I was just talking about it tonight because the board of directors here has told me that they're going to maybe working with one of the cable companies to have the place rewired for their cable. We've got two different suppliers. One is Verizon Fios, which is fiber optic, and the other is a traditional coaxial cable company. What was I going to say? I'm so tired. The noise level from everything around here, all the power wiring, everything just radiates RF. It's what they call common mode interference. So I've even turned up all the circuit breakers in my own apartment, and there's six apartments in the building, and very, very noisy. On the other hand, when there's a blackout, when the power goes out to the whole neighborhood, it's beautiful. It's absolutely clean and easy, you know, so instead of an S6 to an S9 noise level, and that's pretty much true from 3 to 60 or more megahertz, that the noise level is somewhere between, as they say, S6 and S9, sometimes worse. Get a blackout, the noise level is, you know, below S0, you know, you need stays at S0, and then it's so easy, you can work people, you know, Q5 that are only 2 S units above the noise. The problem I have of just going on 50, 125 and making a blind call with an S6 noise level is I could be stepping on and interfering with a number of stations that are just below my noise level. I need somebody who would be so much stronger than normal come over the noise. So this is what has also restricted me on HF. On HF, though, I am using, I think I told you, a loop antenna, and so that has helped me cope with the noise. I'm really wondering now if they rewire, what they're telling me is the coax company is going to put one main feed. Instead of running six coax feeds up here of RG6, going through the attic to the various apartments, which they do now, I think they're going to run one main feed of something thicker, you know, larger diameter, and then have some way of splitting it up in the attic for the six separate RG6 feeds. What I'm worried is that they may be active electronics they're going to put in the attic, because I use that attic, and that's where my loop is. So I may just have even more interference. I may just have to give up the ghost.
Wow, that's really interesting. You know, and it's the total opposite over here. There's not enough. Our phone company almost does not exist. You know how I've retired from Verizon. You know, they're big time, you know. Over here, the company went from Quest, became CenturyLink when I moved out here 3 years ago. They went through a process, they rebranded over to CenturyLink. Almost nobody uses them. They have one technician for the entire town. Can you believe that? Population 9,000. And the surrounding areas, which go hundreds of miles out into the plains, he has to service them. But most people don't even use Quest anymore, because they have such a limited bandwidth. I mean, it's CenturyLink. Most people here use the cable company, believe it or not, for our carrier, for because they have better bandwidth. And then here's the next one. The next town up, called Hemingford, Nebraska, that's the town where they actually portrayed in Children of the Corn, actually. That's the, it says the town outside of Hemingford, Nebraska, in the beginning of the movie. And that's just what it looks like up there, because they said Stephen King got the idea when he rolled through here. So what happened is, he said, this looks like a good place to put a horror movie, so he did. But what I wanted to say was, they had their own phone company, Hemingford Phone Company, believe it or not. And that's how things are out here. We have the exact opposite situation you're dealing with. Back to you.
Yeah, I'm tempted to say how quaint. You know, as a kid, I used to go up to the Catskills and these small towns for our summer resorts. And, you know, back in those days, not now, there were some small local phone companies. and the equipment was old and all that. I mean, I remember party lines, you know, two rings it's you, three rings it's your neighbor, you know, that kind of stuff. And I certainly remember as a kid seeing the phones that you had to crank first, you know, get a little voltage into the battery and on the wall. And, you know, again, the microphone was put on the wall and you try to get up close to the microphone. And I remember those. But again, they're just memories. It's different now.
Hey, Howie. I hate to say I gotta jump out, man. I got something to take care of here, but 73's on that. And go around with you one more time, but you know I'm at work over here in the salt mines, as they call it, and they got some customers banging on the door. So hey, man, let's see what happens, man. Let's brainstorm on this, that loop antenna and everything, and maybe it might be for the better when the cable company swaps everything around and improves their service. You know, this common mode problem has only gotten worse and worse, and in a way, I'm sort of glad that I went away from the whole situation and got to look back at it now, because I came back 9 years later, and things haven't gotten any better. They've only gotten worse. So I retreated over the mountain here and came out here. I didn't want anything to do with it, to be honest with you, because it's just a quality of life issue, you know what I'm saying? It's quality of life, and all that common mode noise you're hearing is also inundating people with RF, and there's nobody regulating that, because they say it's in such small increments, at such small levels, at such frequencies, that we don't see any reason for that right now to be regulating it to a certain extent. And meanwhile, later on down the road, they're going to find out that, you know, it was bad for you, and that caused all kind of these things to happen and spurred this kind of thing in this guy's body to happen, and they should have regulated it better. And when you're inundated by so many little, levels of it, it all builds up to a big level, you know? And it's all a quality of life issue, and they allowed the money to overtake quality of life. That way they can provide those services to take money out of people's pockets, you know? And they forgot about the quality of life. It all started back when I was in and they were putting these cell sites on rental apartment rooftops. And the landlord said, I don't care if Verizon's going to pay me $5,000 a month to have these antennas on here. I go, what about the people that live right underneath it? He says, I don't care. If they don't like it, they can move. I'll rent that apartment out tomorrow to somebody else. Back to you.
Roger. Well, I don't want to hold you, but I will take exception because the thing with RF, I mean, I would entertain it, but to me it doesn't prove out because, all my life I've known people who were hams who've been around RF regularly, just like I'm 1 foot from my antenna, and I've been using, RF all my life. I haven't detected any problem that could be associated with that. Of course, I do have health problems. And what about the guys who used to work up, on the 50-kilowatt, 100-kilowatt stations, all that? And again, I knew a lot of old-timers, spent 40 years, in those environments, and we never saw any problem from that. So I do think that RF is relatively safe. And of course, they do use it now for some treatments. I just had an MRI the other day, and I think they hit you with like a 30-kilowatt peak of RF and magnetism at the same time. 73 there, Ken. Take care of what you got to take care of. N2VHC from K2EIR.
Okay, yeah, we'll pick it up later and pick up where we left off. Yeah, is it disgusting? You actually want me to do something over here and pay me for it, other than talk on the radio. I mean, they actually want me to perform a job function here. Terrible. Almost like slavery, right? No, I'll see you later. 73s, man. Keep the faith. N2VHC. Out.
N2VHZ. Repeater. Disconnected.
K2HO, anybody out there?
You're at Z, K2EIR.
How you doing?
just hold on. I'm here, turn down his volume. I'm testing a Bluetooth speaker I just got.
Very good. Okay. If you need me to count or do something like that, just ask.
No, it's for my cell phone, but I just turned on the dual band to see if anybody's out there. You got Tom here in Brooklyn, KD2HJR. Who's that?
Good evening, Tommy. My name's Howie. I am K2EIR, just like Ohm's Law.
K2EIR?
That is correct. Voltage, current, and resistance.
Okay, you got me here in Brooklyn. What's your QTH?
I'm in Tarrytown, New York, up the Hudson. In fact, the full name of the town is Tarrytown on the Hudson. Yeah, give me a call at us again, because I didn't write it down, and we'll probably speak again, and maybe if we do it in the next few days, it'll still be here written on my desk, but the old memory doesn't work the way it used to. I got KC2, and I know you're in Brooklyn. KC2, what's the rest of it? HJR, was it?
Kilo Delta 2, Hotel Juliet Romeo.
Very good. Okay. Well, I probably ought to turn in. I was just talking with Ken out in Alliance, Nebraska, coming in on Echo Link. Been on the computer before. You probably have heard Ken. We were just having a chat. He used to live back east here, and so we were just reminiscing about the good old days.
Yeah, Roger, the good old days. Back in the day, I basically grew up on 11-meter, the CB craze and everything. Got a CB radio when I was 12 years old. But on a side note, not to change subjects suddenly, I think I've talked to Ken before on another repeater through other people, like Kaz and Todd. I'm sure you guys probably heard of them. They're on the uplinks. But you let the from the CB, I went to sideband, and guys on the sideband said, you got to get your ticket and try the dual band, and that's what I did, and that's how I ended up here. And you know, I'm pretty much a new, you know, technician, about 9 months old, I'd say. Well, coming up on 1 year, maybe. Back to you.
Very good, Tom. Okay. Well, if you consider yourself to allow me to do some of my proselytizing, can have a certain amount of fun on the air, and I think we all do, and we all come back to it. It's enjoyable speaking to other people, but what you really should do in ham radio mission to really make it a good experience is build a few things, little simple projects. And I always say, actually, you want to get on HF, because on HF, you know, not that 11 meters isn't, but on HF there's a certain magic to the radio. You know, there's nothing like bouncing signals through the ionosphere and talking to the other side of the world. It's just something, you know. It's been that way for me for a very, very long time. I'd say my first radio experience on shortwave, you know, as a listener, it's like 61 years ago. So the magic then is still the magic now. It was a little bit stronger then, but it's something, you know, those are the two things I recommend. There's nothing like using something you've built, especially if it has real usefulness and applicability. For example, in my mobile, and I'm at home now, I built myself a hands-free setup. So it's just a little amplifier, an audio amp, but it allows me to have a microphone on the visor, the sun visor of the car, and audio still comes through the speaker on receive, and so I also have a switch on the toggle switch on the dashboard and a treadle switch on the footrest, and I built that after having to drive to and from work on a curvy road and, every day, and saying, you know, holding a microphone in one hand and trying to drive that with the high-speed idiots next to me was just crazy. So I built it. I've never, I get so much enjoyment over such a small little project every time I use it. So that's my recommendation. One man's opinion, as they say. KC2HJR from K2EIR.
Yeah, I don't know if you're saying KC, it's a kilo delta.